This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. Got another great episode. We're going to talk about EVs today. Always glad to have you here. We appreciate all 9-plus years and over, 1,200 episodes between all of our brands that we brought to you and the Aftermarket Radio Network, which, that's our powerhouse with some incredible podcasters on it. Hey, we all know somebody who's affected by breast cancer, right? Did you know that our aftermarket service repair industry has an initiative started by two shop owners? It's called Breaks for Breasts, which so far has raised $1.8 million for a vaccine for triple-negative cancer. 100% of every penny donated goes directly for research at the Cleveland Clinic. We need your help. And we need your involvement, too, in the vaccine, because the vaccine's in clinical trials. If you participate in Breaks for Breasts every October or any time during the year, find out more about it at breaksforbreasts.com. Enroll your shop in this great cause. I have Dave Gillies. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you doing, Carm?
I'm great. We did a show, a few years ago. I'm embarrassed to say it was way back in 2021. And you were with a company called All Electric Vehicles, or All AV, right? All EV?
All EV Canada. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
It was a fascinating business model. So I had to do a podcast with you on that. But since, Dave's doing a million things. I can't wait for you to hear all the cool stuff he has to talk about. The company was sold, and it's to a Canadian or North American dealership company?
Yep. So after being in business a year and a half, we were approached by one of the largest auto groups in Canada. They saw our visions, saw what we were doing, the progression that we had made. Since I was talking to you, we were on to our third dealership, and we dealt just with electric vehicles, nothing else. And we're in Atlantic Canada, and it was a time where there's a lot of transition happening. A lot of things were moving very quickly. We saw that there was a bigger growth to happen that we could not sustain. So we were approached by this auto group, and they acquired us. And from there, they incorporated our business model into their network, which they own over 84 dealerships.
You being such an expert on EVs, you became kind of, people wanted pieces of you, it seems to me, based on all the things that I found out that you're doing today. Curriculum roles, advisory roles, certification roles, you're with Console Labs. It's almost like your career or your workload exploded.
Yeah, it's been crazy. It's a roller coaster, and it's really exciting. And seeing others in the same space I am, other instructors have moved into the EV training and so on. They're seeing it as well. It's an exciting time. Whether we like EVs or we don't like them, they're here, they're there to be repaired, they're there to make money on, and shops adopting electric vehicles into their workspaces just makes sense. It's like, there's a lot of cars out there. The number 5 best-selling vehicle in North America last year was an electric vehicle, and we're looking at more and more of them being hitting our roads with lots of mileage on them, which means more repair, more services, and so on. And, so it's really, we need to get the industry up to speed, get them ready for electric vehicles and servicing them, understanding them, and being able to do it safely as well, too, and profitably.
Yeah. Was that 5th selling vehicle a Tesla?
Yes, it is. It's the Model Y. And number 13, I believe, is the Model 3. And the first 4 in front of it are all trucks.
Registration is now open for Apex 2024, November 5th through the 7th. Apex will build upon the incredible success of Joe's Garage, a 10-bay working environment. From hands-on to the best training, if you earn your living in the auto service aftermarket, Apex is for you. Visit AAPEXshow.com. Hey, for over 30 years, NAPA Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the best, most comprehensive SMS in the industry. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find NAPA Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. Also, thanks to AftermarketManagementNetwork.com for information that can help you move your business ahead, and for the free and informative LaborRateTracker.com. How do you see maybe the U.S. or maybe the North American market. I mean, there's so much talk about it. The used cars can't sell them. People want to return them. I hear crazy stuff. But from your perspective, and you're closer to it than a lot of people, how do you see it formulating itself?
It's not slowing down. So whatever you read in mainstream media is there's a lot of media. Like when you're reading papers and that talking about, you know, charging issues and delivery issues and Ford backing off as an example, you know, there's a whole backstory. When you have multi-billion dollar manufacturer building brand new factories, it's not slowing down. Honda just announced their massive EV manufacturing plant in Ontario. And, you know, we're seeing more battery plants being built. Tesla's looking at building more gigafactories. You see Hyundai making shifts with their factories and their facilities for EVs. So it's really hard pressed. It's like, you know, people say, well, there's a lot of EVs on the lot, but there's still back orders on them. People are still having to order the cars and wait for them to come in. You know, there is some hype around, you know, the negative about EVs, but it's very, very little. And that's all we hear. It's like the squeaky wheel. So we always get the squeaky wheel effect, and we're not seeing the bigger picture. And I think that's where, you know, the aftermarket really has to embrace that. Don't worry about what the mainstream media is saying or what's out there. Look on your roads. What's out there?
I live in the country, and my power has gone out in the last year more times than in the first 18 years I've lived here. And on some days, it's just beautiful. Oh, so I guess if I pulled in with my EV in my garage, I plugged it in because I knew I needed to have a few hour charge and my power was out for, I say all that for a reason. I haven't read a thing about building our infrastructure and making it so that we have no issues in the future with charging.
There's a double standard with that, because like people ask me, say, well, when we have a blackout or power outage or, you know, we're on power reduction, how do I charge my car? And I go, well, how do you fuel your car when you have a power outage? You know, fuel pumps use electricity to be able to dispense fuel. The difference is, let's say power went out for an extended period of time. Technically, I could buy a solar panels from Walmart, you know, get an inverter, bunch of batteries, and I could start charging my car. But for a combustion vehicle, I would need an oil refinery to do that. So there is always the toss up. And one thing I like to say is that people think that electric vehicles have to be charged every night or every day. And it depends on the range of the vehicle, but most vehicles today are getting around 300 miles, well over 400 kilometers on a single charge. And most people don't drive that, you know, weekly. So like, you know, so if you're driving 20, 30 kilometers a day, you're only going to charge once a week anyways. And so it's not as big as a concern as we had with where we have the short range vehicles of the past, where you only get like maybe 120 kilometers or, you know, maybe 100 miles on them, some of them depending on the size of the battery in the vehicle. But today's modern electric vehicles are getting significant range now. So charging isn't as big from that standpoint. But I like your point is that the infrastructure that we talk about is still maturing.
Nice word.
It's maturing. I travel from Halifax to Quebec City, which is 1,100 kilometers each way. Takes 11 hours to do it. And I use my vehicle. I use a charging hour. I only have to stop three times to charge. You know, and it's not crazy. It's like, you know, but in other areas, it's not there. And so, you know, doing long distance travel in an electric vehicle, you have to have some planning done. You have to make sure you understand the infrastructure and where you're stopping, where you're staying, and costs. Like right now, I'm seeing costs of some of these chargers going to 68 cents a kilowatt hour. So, which is significant. When I charge at home, it's here. It's in my place. It's only like 13 cents a kilowatt hour. So significant difference in cost. So
a couple of things. First of all, Dave is here because he is like a quintessential encyclopedia on EVs. And so while you're listening, you pull anything you want from this very smart man on allowing you to shape the decisions you make as a shop owner, as a technology specialist in as a tech to get the training, to buy the tools, get the equipment, because EVs are coming. There's no doubt. We can argue as much as they want, but they're here, and we can kick and scream all the way to the doctor's office. The doctor is going to tell you, listen, you've got to get out every so many kilometers or miles and stretch a little bit. What a great excuse to charge the car, right?
It's funny. It's like, and I do hear it all the time from, and I think even last time when you interviewed me back in 2021, we had just actually had a customer drive 2 hours to our shop to get some basic service done to his vehicle because the local shop down there would not bring his vehicle in unless the volunteer fire department was available. And I think that we are missing the boat. It's like, as technicians and professionals in this industry, we don't really care what the powertrain systems are on the vehicles or how they're being powered or what they look like. What we want to be able to do is be able to repair these vehicles effectively, cost effective as well, too, profitable, and keep these cars on the road. This way, then the cars that you do like, you make a wage from, you know, fixing the those cars, and then you can buy whatever you want. But I do find that there's still this negative fact about electric vehicles. Like, it's funny because when I was doing the trade and that, I was not a fan of diesel vehicles. I actually did not like diesel vehicles at all. But I knew that by repairing them and servicing them, I made a really good wage from fixing those vehicles. So, you know, and then I could go out and buy my gas-powered muscle cars and whatnot, you know, so.
Dave, you bring up such a great point. I don't think we are fighting the fact that EVs are here, that we're going to have to repair them. I think we're approaching it either really slow, mid-range, or quickly. And we wanted to talk about a little bit about curriculum, the kind of advice that you're giving worldwide. You and I talked a little bit about some certifications that are out there. But just so that you understand, this guy, as I said, is from Canada, Nova Scotia. I usually do an interview with people whose times are behind me, but you're ahead of me. I find that so interesting. And you were also telling me when we were on the phone a couple of weeks ago that Tesla just built a huge facility up there.
Yeah, they just built a 60,000 square foot service center. Ironically, back in 2021, when we first opened, Tesla actually visited our facility and said they would never open a service center in Atlantic Canada because it just didn't make sense. Until about 8 months ago, it is the second largest service center in Canada. Other than BC, they're opening or building a new 120,000 square foot facility. So time's moving very quickly and things change and you never say never. That's for sure.
And the reason we bring that up and the reason that we're telling our audience is you got to pay attention to this stuff. It makes sense somewhere along the business decisions that you make. And that is Tesla's doing everything they can to stay number one and relevant in spite of, yeah, I see a lot of negative press about Tesla. I've never driven a Tesla. I think I've sat in one once. If I bought an EV, I'd want to buy a Tesla. Although, why would I want to go at the expense right now? But really important, let's talk about your curriculum role and all the things that you're doing to help guide people. And I do think that you've worked with NAPA on their EV Ready program.
Yeah, so some of the stuff I do with different groups is I help do consulting, help them different areas with, right now we're working on some articles with NAPA and progressing on through, especially with ConciLab, developing curriculum for schools. So because ConciLab does a lot of curriculum development, product development, training aids for anything right from high schools all the way through vocational into even universities in some case on EV or on motive power transportation products, diesel, gas, propane, hydrogen, everything, electric. And one of the exciting things is where we can provide the curriculum, you know, help instructors learn the technology, which then can be taught to the next generation technicians. And seeing some of the awesome products that are out there, how they're implementing EVs into their programs, the schools up here in Canada, the occupational standards for the RSOS, which is the Red Seal Occupational Standards, has just now incorporated electric vehicles into heavy equipment, truck and transport, automotive, service technician, and collision technician. So this is part of now the new occupational standards in Canada that's taught in apprenticeship. So it's moving along, you know, and of course, they're not going to be implementing these types of things in curriculum if there was only one or two cars out there. So there's a significant amount of vehicles that are now in our mainstream that it had to be addressed at the training level for apprentices. So
yeah, this whole thing reminds me of talking to people when 1234YF refrigerant came out and people sat on buying the machine a little bit. And then people finally said, you know what, if I don't do it, I'm going to lose this opportunity. And I remember one shop owner telling me, yeah, I got it. And we maybe did, you know, 30 or 40 in the first year. And then we did 100 and then we start doing it for other shops and we're doing 250. The point of it is they were first with it. They knew that maybe they were a little ahead of the curve, but they vested in the equipment. In the EV's case, invest in the tooling and the equipment and the training so that you can be first in market to do this and tell your buddies, just like when people are buying calibration equipment for ADAS. Okay, hey, I don't have to spend that kind of money, but I'll send it down to Tommy.
Yeah. And the minute that happens, it's funny because I always have this conversation as well. First of all, most people that buy electric cars have a second vehicle, which is a gas-powered vehicle. But they go, well, don't worry. Like, you know, they're thinking, well, I'll just take it to my regular shop down the road and they can do the tire rotations, the brake caliper cleaning, do the underbelly pan servicing and, you know, my basic maintenance. If they walked into that shop and they said, hey, you know, Mr. Jones, great to see you. Like, you know, you see you have a new vehicle there. He goes, yeah, it's an electric vehicle. I need the tires rotated. They go, oh, whoa. We don't work on electric vehicles. We don't want anything to do with them. We just don't believe in them. We don't think that they're, you know, we don't have the training maybe on them, but it's just a tire rotation. That, and then next thing you know it, he has to go to another shop. But guess what? The other shop can fix his light or do the service work to his electric vehicle. But guess what? They also do all the other services. So that means now he might start bringing his gas-powered vehicle to the other shop. That means that the first shop may have just potentially lost a customer. So
stop stopping is your message.
Yes. And that happens. We've seen that. Like, you know, and like the guy that drove 2 hours from down, you know, in Lunenburg, and he was a regular customer of us, and he was bringing his other vehicles up when he came into the city. You know, there is that, you know, transition happening. It's like alignments and so on. It's like, you know, you buy an alignment machine, you'll never make your money back on an alignment machine just doing alignments. You make it on the steering suspension parts that you sell with the alignment and the tires and so on. So,
oh, if you're not selling tires, you may never pay for that alignment equipment because the person they're going to buy their tires from will probably do the alignment. And
yeah, every technology, like even scan tools, like diagnosing vehicles, like, you know, the whole point of diagnosing a vehicle is you want to retain that customer in your shop. You know, you don't want to be sending them away. You want to fix their vehicle because the next time they need brakes or suspension, they're going to come back to you. But if you fail to be able to service and repair their vehicle for a drivability problem, they have to go somewhere else. They're like, well, you know what? It's like, you know, you guys fixed my problem with the drivability. You guys do tires and brakes and exhaust and all these other things, like, you know, so I might as well start coming to you. So it's important that our industry stays up to date, embraces the technologies that are out there, and be prepared and be the first on the block to be able to start servicing and advertising that, yeah, our technicians are certified to work on electric vehicles. We've had the training and we have the skills and the equipment and the staff to be able to service your vehicle. So
regarding curriculum and training, I mean, you're still out in front of people. Did you teach at STX this year?
No, I didn't. I was at Vision this year. So we went actually to Vision. Actually, I saw you there. It was exciting and seeing that award that you got. That's very impressive. So congratulations on that.
Let me just back up 1 minute as we're continuing to talk about platforms. This question was floating through my mind and I couldn't get it out. Are hybrids still going to be like the most critical, if you will, technology, functional technology in vehicles? Are people going to say, listen, I may not want to go all the way over there, but I'm going to go out and buy a hybrid? Are hybrids going to have the biggest share of new tech vehicles?
Hybrids have been around for quite a while, since about 2004.
Maybe 10, 12 years, yeah.
Yeah, 2004, Prius.
Oh, 2004.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm wrong, because the Insight was introduced into US in 2000. And then we saw some transition of the Insights coming in through those years. And then I think Toyota launched its Prius back in 2004. I could be corrected on these dates. It's on hybrids proved that technology could work. Like, you know, if you look at all our hypercars and supercars, they're going to a hybrid system. The instant torque of the motor, the efficiency and so on, you know, can really propel these cars. So the performance side of it. But hybrids, as we move into the mainstream, I think PHEVs, plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, will become more dominant because it gives consumers best of both worlds. Like, you know, so if they can get like, you know, a 50-mile range, you know, most people don't drive more than, you know, 20 miles a day in most cases. So yeah, they could easily drive back and forth to work, never using the gas-powered system. But then when they want to do that extra trip or they want to go that further distance, then they could have a combination of the hybrid system to assist maximizing fuel, maximizing, you know, efficiency, but also not having to worry about charging stations and so on long trips. So I could see that the cost-wise, the difference that comes in with PHEV over a full electric or a full gas-powered vehicle is the cost. Because you're taking the electric vehicle technology and the gas power technology and you're combining them together. And so there is still that maintenance side of it, which is good for our industry. So we don't knock not the less maintenance. Whenever I'm talking to groups, especially with technicians, I don't talk about the lack of maintenance that EVs have. I talk about the different type of maintenance EVs have and some of the hidden maintenance that EVs have that technicians need to be aware of as well. So, but yeah, you know, so I think that we're going to see a combination of full electric and PHEV vehicles will become more dominant in that area of alternative fuels for our vehicles. So,
hey, Apex 2024 registration is now open at aapexshow.com. Now, Apex has an incredible value for the service professional, shop owner, technician, and service advisor. Joe's Garage is your place to hang out with 10 working bays and real live working conditions. You'll find special seminars on Audi, VW, BMW, Mercedes, Tesla, under the hood diagnostics, advanced drivability, ADAS calibration, transmission training from ATRA, and more. Business and sales training on mastering organizational skills, time management, leading your team, and driving profits, among others. This year, the training courses are some of the best offered ever with the industry's best and brightest trainers and coaches. This year's Apex 2024 will have more product demos, trending training, marketing and social media support to help you grow your career, sales, and profits. Remember, if you earn your living in the aftermarket, then Apex is the expo for you. Continue listening as we bring you the latest from Apex 2024 and save the date, November 5th through the 7th. Don't hesitate. Go to aapexshow.com. Let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NapaTrax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NapaTrax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NapaTrax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com. So it's always great to get tips or ideas that you can call your own. At automotivemanagementnetwork.com, a favorite feature for many members is short and to the point real-world ideas for your shop. At Automotive Management Network, they serve up over 365 tips to cover a year's worth of ideas that you can use to improve yourself and your company. Get a ton of great stuff at automotivemanagementnetwork.com, the creators of laborratetracker.com, the industry's only resource for labor rate info. So how does a guy from Nova Scotia be a worldwide advisor? I'm proud of you. This is wonderful. Dave and I got on a phone call a couple of weeks ago to prepare for this episode, and he's telling me, you're dropping these names like Saudi Arabia, and I'm thinking, man, this guy made it.
I've been approached by different organizations. Working with EVs has really helped understand them better, understand technicians and their roles with electric vehicles. I worked in the education system for 12 years before starting All EV Canada. So, you know, so I have that background on with apprenticeship and customized training and so on. It's exciting when I was actually able to go, and as you mentioned, Carm, I was actually able to go to Saudi Arabia, and I was actually working with large manufacturers in Saudi. No secret is Lucid and Seer. Seer just announced theirs with the new NAVA school, which is the North American Vehicle Academy. National Automotive Vehicle Academy. And I worked directly with the OEMs in developing competencies within the roles of the production manufacturing plants with electric vehicles. This goes right from like the paint shops, the press rooms to, you know, assembly and batteries and so on. So it's really exciting to see how they think and how they adopt and what they do. I'm not part of the design or the engineering. I was more on the lines type thing, helping with the development of a program for them. It was really cool. The best thing about the whole trip was talking to the OEMs. It's amazing how OEMs disconnect a little bit from what they call end of line. And that means when the vehicle hits the final phase of its production or manufacturing, then it goes out to dealerships and then it's sold. And with my background, it was really interesting dealing with both the OEMs. I introduced into end of line service, you know, talking with the people that are going to service these vehicles and the training that they're going to need. And both OEM manufacturers agreed that, you know, something that they had to look at it within the OEM level, and they implemented the end-of-line technician part of their program. So, which is pretty neat that the OEMs have taken that on in Saudi Arabia, where they weren't looking at it at first. And in North America, I had to tell them, like in North America, the OEMs do work with their dealerships and so on to provide that training and so on. So it's a whole new breed. But the other thing with Saudi Arabia is you're talking one of the largest, richest oil countries in the world, and they're fully involved with electrification. They built two massive facilities. They bought Lucid. So the Saudi Arabia government owns Lucid as well as Seer. There's other projects on the go right now with them. So, but, you know, so what do you say? You're here, you're in an oil-rich country selling crude oil to North American and around the world. But meanwhile, in-house, they're building electric vehicle manufacturing plant.
I'm sorry, I'm confused. For all the right reasons.
It's like the drug dealer that doesn't take his own drugs. It's really exciting to see that. And then, of course, you know, through North America. But my passion really is the education side, knowing that getting a broader market of training out there rather than doing small training events is like getting to the schools, training instructors, training trainers, having products that can help deliver that technology to industry and help them understand to be able to service and maintain these vehicles. And that's a bigger picture, because as technicians are going through their schools, you know, the programs themselves have to involve modernization of what the vehicles have. Like, you know, electric vehicles are not new technology, but the thing is, on our roads today, they're new. So we have to adapt and adopt, you know, processes and procedures, safe work practices, and understanding the use of equipment and tools and PPE and all this stuff. that go along with electric vehicles. So,
okay, National Automotive Vehicle Academy, NAVA. Give me a little bit more on that.
Yeah, so that was an interesting part of the program, and that's what we're there to develop the curriculum for.
You were where? In Saudi Arabia doing this?
Yeah, it was in Saudi Arabia, yeah. The whole pretense was to be able to have one school that could teach automotive service technicians, assembly line workers, and engineers all under one roof.
So this isn't anything here in the U.S. This is over there, this NAVA. Ah, okay.
Yeah, totally over there. Everything's over in Saudi, or KSA, as they would reference it. And just give a little quick background. It's funny, because when I was contracted to go over there, I was expecting to, like, dusty, desert, hot, kind of, you know, not modern, I guess you could say. And I was totally blown away. It was like, it's unbelievable. I was in Riyadh for most of the time, and it was I can't even, if you have a bucket list item to go someplace that's like incredible, it's definitely in Riyadh. It's nothing like you would think it would be like. So it was really interesting to see how much was going on. So, and everyone there says, like, they always think that Saudi nationals are all rich, but actually they're not. And they struggle just as much as we do in North America. So they have to find their trades, they have to find their careers, they have to find, you know, jobs themselves. So the NAVA school was able to bring in Saudi nationals that basically could be trained to be engineers, to be trained to be auto service technicians, or even just skilled workers that would work on the production or a manufacturing line. So
I love what you're saying. You also told me that you're working on certificate programs with NAVA, right? Will anything like that ever come to the U.S.?
I think what's going to happen, like right now you see a lot of universities and that, you know, like mechatronics and all these other degrees that happen with the engineers that work within these manufacturing plants. But I can see that there's going to be somewhat of a blueprint that will come in that says, hey, like, you know, do everything in one place, like a university that can teach all these different things. I visited several universities in the U.S. in the last year, discussing certain things with the NAVA school. And it's amazing how many holes there were in their programs. That means that if a student had gone to the school, they could only do certain aspects of the program, and then they would have to go somewhere else.
You are absolutely laying right up into this curiosity that I have, or this need to know about post-secondary and high school. Where are we going to get the funds and the equipment and the training to bring to our young people? Because essential high-skilled trade, we need to be teaching this leading-edge type of technology, but we're not all equipped.
So we're seeing a lot of STEM programs being introduced into the high schools. So that's your set of sciences, technology, engineering, mathematics. You know, and that's really interesting students to be innovators. Innovation is really, you know, opening the minds and getting them thinking. And they're starting to do that at a high school level. And we're seeing, and believe it or not, many of the schools that we're dealing with ConciLab is starting at the high school level. A lot of funding is going into high schools to build entire centers for electric vehicles at a high school. So, and we're seeing it as well with colleges and so on. So I think the idea is that we have sustainability. We have doing things in a better way. So, like, you know, whether it's finding ways for renewable energy and so on, I think this is where it's going to start, is with the high schools. A lot of these high school students are brilliant, you know, and they want to learn more. They want to do more. They grow up, you know, already advanced into a world of technology. And you know, and to hold them back until they get to college or university to experience that is a little unfair to them. So now I see more and more of it going into the high schools and becoming very technical in that sense that we haven't seen, you know, ever in these schools. So, which is really exciting, like where they're getting robotics programs and engineering programs. Not that it has, but they're preparing the students for that. So, and we've had that in the past, a little bit of it, but now we're seeing more and more. And I think government is investing more and more because they know our skilled workforce needs to have that advancements. They need to have, brilliant people in order to, you know, sustain our economy and, you know, and continue on to innovate new technology. So it's super exciting to see what's even happening at the lower levels of our education system. So,
all right. If you ever want to get a hold of Dave Gillies, G-I-L-E-S, PowerDB is his company. LinkedIn is a great place to learn all about him. He works with ev-specialistgroup.com. And I would love to ask you a political question. Where does China's role in this whole EV thing come in, according to? We're talking lithium, we're talking batteries. I mean, we hear so much stuff.
It's funny because China has a lot of, you know, a lot of innovation, very smart people. They have technologies, and I don't pay a lot of attention to what happens in China. It's something I can't control anyway. So
I figure you're a bystander hearing all this stuff. You're in deeper than anybody that I know, and you're realizing that we need infrastructure, we need equipment, we need batteries, we need all of these things. And it's being bounced around like a political hot potato. That's all. I just curious your thoughts. And if you don't want to answer, I understand.
You know, it's something that, like, you know, of course, the economy and that could be affected with tariffs and stuff like that if they're not done properly on imported products. But at the same time, as professionals working on cars and dealing with vehicles and so on, I think that our focus is we already have agendas that we need to fulfill with, you know, being able to service these. Because when the EVs come in from other countries, as well as we go over to other countries as well, you know what? There's still the mechanical, electrical, electronic systems that we see here. So it's nothing. They still need to be fixed. They still need to be repaired. You know, people want to maintain them. So if we do see, you know, an off-brand vehicle come from China, Korea, which we already do see, you know, with some of these vehicles, it shouldn't really affect us in a way because we know how to service and repair them. So,
all right. So any final words to anyone who's listening and says, wow, this was really cool, learned a lot of neat things, but I'm still not convinced. I got to wait another little while before I put my EV shingle up or I decide to go to an EV class. Maybe they need to start with hybrids, who knows? But to not be in the EV business, I keep hearing from you, is a huge mistake.
Yeah, you're putting a nail into your own coffin, in my opinion. It's like it's the technology's there. Whether you like it, you say, well, our city only has 5 EVs there in the whole city. Yeah, but it's also a message when you start servicing electric vehicles. People see them as advanced vehicles. They see them as these computers on wheels, and they just think they're really amazing. And if they see the local shop, you know, that's been there for 50 years, and they have, you know, I'm just going to use an example, but a Tesla on the hoist or a Polestar or something like that, you know, they're just doing basic service to it. They're changing over tires or doing alignment to the vehicle or whatever. It puts a message to the consumer that these guys are working on electric vehicles. Like, they must be really up on their game. I thought only dealerships could work on these cars. And, you know, and there's, you know, ABC Automotive, and they have, you know, they're working on Teslas. Like, you know, that's, I don't own an EV, but, you know, they're thinking, well, if they can fix EVs, they can fix my, you know, 2010 Toyota Corolla. Like, you know, so.
You just gave me this wild idea. All right. So I'm a shop owner. You convinced me. I'm going to go out and buy a used Tesla. I'm going to go to one of those vinyl sign shops. I'm going to get this thing wrapped, and it's going to say, Dave's Automotive, we fix this rolling computer.
Marketing. And know what, the one thing I can say is the final words, if your shop wants to send a message out to, you know, to the consumer that you're EV ready and you're willing to work on EVs, stick a couple level 2 chargers on the side of your building. You can pass key lock them so nobody can use them unless they go to the front counter and ask for the pass key. It's not a huge investment, but I'll tell you, the community EV owners that lives on social media, because that's how they bought their cars in most cases, they researched them. And you know what? And they're on social media and they say, hey, you know what? You know, George's garage down the road there, they just installed 2 EV chargers, and it's amazing how fast that message gets around. And then somebody may say, well, they're only for use of the shop. And they like, oh, well, at least I know that they're doing EVs. Like, you know, that's great. If I have a problem with my car, I don't have to drive, you know, 100 kilometers or 60 miles to get to the dealership. I can go visit those guys and see if they can help me out, you know, if it's not under warranty. So
the shops are putting them in. You're right. And I think it's smart to get on some kind of MapQuest thing or Google Maps. I don't know how you can get your charging station to be up, but we've done an episode. It was Judy Zimmerman put one in, and I really asked her the question, was the Geo perfect? She says, yeah, there's hotels all around us. So what's interesting is to pull into a hotel and have a not only a service center, but an EV charging station over near you.
A lot of hotels nowadays, they advertise charging stations available for their guests. I'm one of those. I look for a hotel. If they don't have a charging station, I drive an EV. I won't stay there unless it's absolutely necessary. But, you know, essentially I'll go to a hotel that has a charging station. And so.
Okay. Have you driven a Plaid?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have. Insane. That's all I got to say.
I'm going to ask you to define it in one word, and you already did.
Yeah, you want to hurt neck. If you want to hurt your neck, just drive a Plaid.
It's a great ending to a great episode. We learned so much here. And our objective was to pass enough information, just sort this out in your own mind and be sure that you don't make a mistake and stay out of the EV repair business. Hey, Dave Gillies, thank you so much for being on, man.
Oh, thank you very much, Carmen. Have a great day.
You too, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.